Hello, and welcome to Unmuted Unmastered. I'm Will, and this is the internet's most cardiovascular music podcast. On the show this week, I'm joined by James.
Hello.
In this episode, we're going to be reviewing the new album by Jaylen. We've got the upcoming releases you need to know about, but first, the news. James, what have you got for us this week?
Hello. This week, I have a new story about copyright infringement again. So Sony have officially won their court case against Tree Fuego, who's a rapper, for copyright infringement, as they said. This is for the song Reflections, written by Toshifumi Hinata, which incidentally I've talked about that album, the song that album is on previously on this podcast. But yeah, the rights for that track is owned by Sony, so Sony have won that, and they've gotten $800,000 from Tree Fuego and also I think it's DistroKid, who's the third party distributor of Tree Fuego's song 90 Miles Per Hour, which has, I think at the time, I think at the end of this lawsuit or at the start of it, I need to check that, but it has at least 170 million Spotify streams, so quite a lot. This is not like an Ed Sheeran case we talked about this year and last year, where it was like, oh, Ed Sheeran has copied this tune a little bit and he's kind of, made it, said that is his own. In this case, it's the rapper has literally just sampled it. I'm saying sampled it very loosely here. It's just that's the backing track, and it's an unlicensed direct use like sample.
I mean, it's the piece with some trap drums and him rapping over the top, isn't it?
Exactly. It's, if you'll know the track if you listen to it. It went viral on TikTok, the song by the rapper, but also the track in general. You'll know it when you hear it, and the artist's piece is literally, it is the track with a little bit of change on it. According to the court, the defendant's response, I don't remember writing this. I'm surprised by what I've written, but yes. I'll just say anyway. According to the court, the defendant's response brief did not meaningfully contest Sony's damages computation, much less identify applicable offsets. Basically the court think that there's no case really. Sony rightfully disputing or rightfully claiming this. One thing I did want to mention, actually, we might think this is like, well, it is, it's big fish versus small fish situation. Like, Sony obviously massive and they have all the money in the world to go to court on this, and the rapper is obviously not hugely, well, not as big as Sony, but I'll quote the court. In fact, the only reasonable behavior in this case was the defendant's, as his consistent attempts to evade service and eschew meaningful communications stymied case progress and drove up Sony's cost. Why do they have to use difficult words? Basically, the defendant, the rapper, he was contacted about this situation and he just ignored it. He evaded attempts to contact of contact and stuff. So he probably would have still had to pay or something, but he avoided that. So the damages came up to a grand total of $800,000. He is, however, allowed to kind of use the 90 miles per hour song still in different ways. So I guess he can remix it and stuff. As long as he pays 50% of the revenues connected to the musical composition to Sony Publishing, music publishing, and 20% of the revenues from the recording to Sony Music Entertainment. So basically, he might as well just leave it. But yeah, it raises the question, does this put off other artists from like sampling? I think not. If you're going to do it like that, then you kind of know what you're getting into. And if you're evading this contact, then even if you don't know, that's not what you're supposed to do. If you're evading contact from people, then I mean, that's on you, really.
Yeah, I mean, when the precedent was set, I mean, this was a long time ago now, like back in the 90s, really, on sampling and having to pay whoever holds the rights to the song some kind of share out of it. That was the sea change, and it was kind of after, you know, kind of seminal albums like Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, where the album is just chock full of samples. You just can't make a record like that today. Because you'd be giving over like all of the money that you're making basically to other people. Like, you just can't do it now. This situation, I don't think changes anything realistically in the modern landscape. It's this guy probably just used the beat because he thought it sounded good, ended up with a viral hit on his hands, and he should have at that point been like, right, I'm making serious money off of this. I need to sort the licensing situation to make sure it's all above board. But he's pushed it off, and it's meant that now he's having to pay the price. But yeah, this is not a situation like Easy Life and Easy Jet, like having a huge conglomerate like come down on them over the use of their name. Like, Sony have a very valid claim, like the court has said, and yeah, it's kind of hard to see it from the other side.
Yeah, it's I guess it's kind of not a shame. This is how this business works. People pay for the rights for things, but Toshifumi Hinata is not seeing any of this, or his estate is not seeing any of this. It's just Sony. But yeah, if you like the song, still listen to it, I guess.
Would his estate not be paid something from Sony? You'd assume that they're getting some kind of, unless like Sony have bought the rights like completely outright, you'd imagine he's getting something.
I'd have to look into that.
Right, let's get on to our review for this week. We're looking at A Coma by Jaylen, released on the 22nd of March 2024 on Planet Mew Records. The album's 11 tracks long and 43 minutes. James, what did you think of the album?
I am actually surprised I enjoyed this as much as I did. After listening to a few songs before I properly listened to the album this week, I wasn't sure if I would enjoy it, but I found myself just getting really into it, and I'm not totally sure why. It was just a really fun album. It kind of has what you want from an electronic album, in my opinion. It has the bass, it has the synth, it has some really like catchy hooks to it, and it makes you move, it makes you, your head bob. It's fun. It's, yeah, like I said, it's very bassy, but it feels quite good. I think it's not going to be my favorite album of all time. It's not going to be one that's on my album of the year list, because I'm just not as into this style. But yeah, I thought it was a great album. I think some things stand out more than others. Some things I wasn't quite sure on, like the decisions they made. But I would say in general, like, every track was a hit for me. There's some things that are a bit unexpected, and like I said, I was unsure why I enjoyed it, but we'll get into that. But yeah, I did enjoy it, and yeah, I just felt myself kind of getting into it. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this record. I've struggled to get into Jalen's stuff in the past. I think I've struggled with footwork as kind of a genre, and I guess this doesn't fit neatly into that box, but I guess would be kind of like a post-footwork type style, I guess, if that means anything at all. Just because I find a lot of the time it feels so, like, frenetic, it loses the feeling of rhythmicness for me, like, because things are changing so quickly and it's so quick, it just feels like it's just kind of a barrage. Or there'll be, like, quite harsh sounds thrown in that just don't work for me. I feel like this album just kind of smooths out a lot of those elements while keeping that depth in terms of the drum and programming, in terms of what's actually going on with the synths and the melodic parts as well. And it just kind of all came together for me into something that I really, really enjoyed. I like how throughout the album you get lots of different feels. I mean, you get moments where it's very sparse and quite kind of haunting or even quite like anxiety inducing. And then you get other moments that are very upbeat and quite almost kind of childish. And you get like other times where it's kind of slightly aggressive, dancier stuff. And yeah, overall, I think it all plays really, really well together. And like the list of contributors on this album, like the features, is properly insane. Like Bjork, Philip Glass, Kronos Quartet, like how?
And it's so unexpected as well. Like, I didn't expect that from just kind of an album that I would have never really listened to if it didn't come to this podcast. Like Philip Glass in this, I'm like, well, okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it kind of speaks to Jalen having a bit of a foot in a few different worlds of being primarily, I mean, this is electronic music and it's very much rooted in dance music, right? In techno and house, obviously footwork as well, but she's also quite like well-renowned as like almost like a classical or neoclassical or like modern composer in that sense, just because of like her quite intricate use of rhythm and also of like interesting melodic parts. And so I think that's kind of how she's managed to get such like huge well-known artists to come on. And yeah, I think they never take away from it being her record, but they really do add. I mean, particularly I feel the Philip Glass feature, I think, works so, so well at the end of the record. I just really liked in his parts, like the slower parts particularly, like I just loved the melody and the playing and everything he's doing there. And then how they blend into the more kind of chaotic elements. And I feel like, and then what she's doing kind of feels separate. Like it does feel like two different players rather than like his part being like merged into her composition, but it all does work together. It feels like a duet, despite the fact that she's doing really complex kind of electronic music, which isn't like a single part, and he's playing a very traditional instrument.
I'm kind of like, I'm still on the fence about this one, to be honest. Like, yeah, you're definitely right. It does feel like a duet and they feel like very separate pieces. After hearing track 9, which is the feature with Kronos Quartet, I did expect there to be a bit more like blending of those two elements in track 11 with Philip Glass. But yeah, like you were saying, the piano playing is beautiful. The arpeggios are awesome. And then the electronic bits that come in between those, that piano is really fun. Like the rest of the album, it's just, it's very harsh, that juxtaposition between that harsh electronic sound and synths and that soft melodic piano is really something. And it's just like, I think I expected it just to flow a bit more, or like at least maybe at the end it comes to, for it to come to a conclusion where these two things are playing together a bit more, but it's not something that really took away from me.
Yeah, I felt like the track brings the album to kind of an emotional conclusion, but obviously maybe doesn't have that kind of within the track, a kind of feeling of finality, I guess, which might play against it as a closer. But I feel like, yeah, it is quite different than the other two features, because the other ones, I feel like the... Obviously, with Kronos Quartet, you can kind of tell that it's the real instruments that are kind of the thing that's being put forward. But with the Bjork one, like, I don't really know what Bjork's done and what Bjork hasn't done. You know, I mean, you assume the vocals, right? But I feel like it's more melded in. So, yeah, that one at the end is a bit different. I really love that track, Borealis, with Bjork. I like that the hats just go, like, trapped to a ridiculous amount where they're going so fast. It's basically like a legato note. And she may as well just be using, like, the initial waveform of the hat as, like, as the oscillator, because it's just, like, so quick. It ends up having this very, like, rough texture to it. I liked that also you get, like, the wobbling bass, and you talked about the bass lines when you were talking about the record, right? But it has that very, like, dub character, but the filter never really opens up all that much, so it stays very low frequency. So it never gets that kind of wob, like, dubstep-y sound to it. Even, like, the kind of older, you know, more classically tasteful dubstep kind of sound, it's more like, I don't know, you feel it in your chest rather than having it kind of come through in the higher registers.
Yeah, the bass is definitely something I want to mention on this track. Like, you get that, you really get that thumpiness, and that's the thing that you feel in your chest. But I think it does have some, like, wobbiness to it, and that's kind of the bass that you can feel in your ears. Like, you feel your eardrums move, or that's how I interpret it. But yeah, this is also a great track for those other little sounds. Like, I listened to this track first on, like, my phone speaker, just because I was interested. And then I listened to it on headphones, and you're like, oh, okay, they've really, like, separated the channels completely. And then, like, one of the main tunes is, like, in the left, and then you also get this, like, little shaker sound, which was fun. Yeah, there's just a lot of different sounds that you can pick out. And then there's, a nice change in time signature as well, and that's done really well. And this goes for the album in general, but you do get these little parts, like part one, part two, like it does separate itself within the track. And I feel like tracks similar to this, that have a similar genre to this album, can sometimes feel like they're playing on this one thing all the time, which can be fine, but I think she's, like, separated it into nice segments for this track. And yeah, I just really enjoyed that. And especially with that time signature change, it really separates it well.
Yeah, I think throughout the album, what she does very well is, like, create these very complicated song structures, or not even necessarily complicated, but just tracks that just keep moving on to the next thing a lot of the time, but they don't feel overwhelming, and like, they don't feel like they're kind of pulling you around to different things. It feels coherent and like it makes sense as you go through, rather than, yeah, being kind of feeling like it's all over the place, which I think particularly with styles like this that are just inherently quite kind of quick and a bit trippy in terms of the drum programming, it would be easy to fall into that trap, but it does end up feeling like it works throughout. One thing I kind of noted, and kind of particularly as you go through towards the later parts of the album, is I feel like, and I don't know if this is just kind of a general trend of dance music kind of coming back around, but there are a lot of sounds that I thought kind of reminded me of the 90s. Lots of, like, like morphing pads that sound like they could have come from like the kind of 90s Korg Rompler type things. Like in Iris, I felt like there are a lot of kind of 90s drum and bass type sounds, like that kind of intelligent sounds. And then again in Alcet, I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that, I felt like, again, kind of similar sounds, but it felt maybe more from like 90s techno. But in a lot of places, yeah, having that slightly kind of throwback dance tone to it, layered over a lot of kind of more traditional analog-y sounds with the kind of drum machine drums and kind of more kind of analog bass lines and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna pronounce it Orset. That's like a really, it has this really, I want to call it like a futuristic sound, but it's a futuristic sound that would have happened in the 90s, you know. And it's just like, it was slightly different from the previous track, I Am, but it does have a similar vibe to another track in the album, which came a bit early, actually. Track two, actually, only a second track, Speed of Darkness, where it also has that, I call it an arcadey sound, which, yeah, plays off that futuristic vibe. But this felt a bit more like darker, especially after that first track. But I felt more inquisitive into what the song was doing. But it still kept that thudding sound. It still kept the soul of the music. It was catchy despite getting like slightly dissonant at times. It was a fun but slightly dissonant.
Yeah, I liked the kind of more dub tone to it with a lot of the sounds on Speed of Darkness. And you mentioned arcadey tones, but in Iris, around like the halfway mark, a lot of the sounds are like quite simple waveforms, but put through a lot of reverb, and just the melodies that they were using in those really made me think of like 16-bit games from like the early 90s. I thought that was an interesting element to kind of throw in, because again, it's like a kind of 90s throwback kind of retro futurism type thing, but in a different way that you might not necessarily like always hear along with it. And that track I did like that was maybe more melodically focused, where I mean, the previous three are a bit more focused on kind of, well, the first two more kind of crazy drums and like the melodic elements are kind of spliced together and glitchy. And then Summon obviously is kind of its own thing with that like dark, menacing, and like the string sounds, which sound like it's almost like the instruments all creaking as they're playing them. Like it's got like a very odd tone. I don't know if that's like the way that they've been mic'd or something that's picking up a lot of like arm sound. I haven't really recorded many string instruments like that, so I don't know what's causing that, but it's a very weird and unusual tone that I enjoyed.
Yes, Summon is it's an interesting one. It's pretty crazy. I called it stimulating. I think that's exactly what it is. It's dissonant and it was a cacophony, really. I did enjoy it, though. Like, the more I listened to it, the more I found myself, like, yeah, I can understand that it still sounds a bit crazy, but I can feel the tune to it. I can feel the beat. I can feel the what the artist was, like, trying to get across. And when those low bass notes come in, and when the kick comes in as well, that's the point where it starts turning into a more of a tune that you can follow along with. Not like the previous, the first half of the track was bad. It's just like, it feels like it's generating a story from itself, if that makes sense. But then in Iris, you really get that more tunefulness. The like really pretty glistening sounds. Then into this bassy beat, but then you still have that pretty synth along with it. And there's some like squidgy sounds as well, which I really enjoyed. It came down a bit more in the second half, but it still kept that energy in its back pocket. And what you mentioned about the arcade for that track, this is the first time where Final Round is quoted, and that's kind of like a throwback to arcade games. And I think in Open Canvas it also does that. I haven't quite found out what the link is there, but yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that same sample used in other tracks, and I don't know if it's her previous stuff or right. just generally in the dance music space, but yeah, I feel like I've heard it before. But yeah, Open Canvas, I feel like, actually, I probably should have brought this up when we were talking about Precision of Infinity, because I really liked in this one, like, the juxtaposition of the drums and the bass, which are very, like, kind of heavy and harsh, and then the very soft and bright keys and, like, the granular synth sounds, and it kind of, like, dips in and out and then plays them together for a bit, and it does have that kind of, here's two very different things playing together kind of feel to it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this song starts punchy, it starts jabby and just like raw sounding, like harsh and raw, but then you get into like these more like chilled beats for a lack of a better word vibe, and then like later on you also get like a city pop vibe, I found. But yeah, that you get that juxtaposition, as you said, and yeah, it's just really fun, and both of those parts are done really well.
I feel like now you've mentioned city pop, we have to talk about Granny's Cherry Pie, which is...
That's not a line you'll hear very often.
Such an interesting... I mean, it does kind of make me think of Batman v Superman in a bad way of Granny's Peach Tea, if you remember that plot point.
All I remember is Martha... Martha's my mum.
Martha! Martha's all of our mums deep down. But yeah, Batman v Superman aside, it's such an interesting change into a very upbeat tone. Mm. And with I really liked the sound of the like high-pitched electric piano doing the lead. And it's at times like very straight up, like melodic, and then it gets a bit more glitchy in some of the heavier moments and then kind of comes back again. And I feel like this kind of has had the potential to feel really out of place on an album that is, I mean, earlier in the record you get Summon, which is almost the polar opposite of what this song is, right? But I think it does work, and it right before the end of the album, again, it could have had that kind of destabilizing feeling of, oh, what direction are we going in now, right before the end when there's not much time to develop on it. But I actually ended up kind of feeling when I got to it that I was enjoying something very different, and it still retains enough of the kind of crazy drums and interesting synth parts that I felt like it worked with the rest.
Yeah, when we're talking through this album now, I feel like it's sounding like you get like these really harsh changes between track to track, like we were talking about with Summon into Iris and like sort of like into this track, Granny Pie. But you don't really feel that when you're going through the album. It keeps that soul, it keeps that main sound behind it, but it really does change up those main parts to make it sound different, but it doesn't feel jarring. It feels just how it should feel. And yeah, I just think that keeps the energy throughout the album. Yeah, I didn't feel like I was getting bored. I didn't feel like it wasn't doing enough. I didn't feel like it was trying too much. I just think it was doing what it needed to do, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. The last few tracks that I really want to mention are Challenge and I Am, which I really liked in kind of the middle part of the album, where it kind of really strips back to a very kind of sparse sound, focusing mostly on the rhythms and also simultaneously pushing more of like an African feeling influence on the sound, of, you know, with the vocal shout in I Am, and just the way that the rhythms are put together just kind of elicits that kind of feeling to it. I really liked that there was that moment of, okay, we're just going to focus on this one element of the sound and not worry about the melody and stuff. And I just found the rhythms really compelling throughout that whole section.
Yeah. These are the percussion tracks. Like, they just sound great. And I think I Am is maybe one of my favorites. I think it's that chanting vocals, that African like influence that we were saying, but also like the start of I Am feels like I'm in like a battlefield. I feel like I'm getting ready for something. I think it's that percussive sound. It feels like the drum is beating behind you while you're ready to charge or something. I don't know. It just sounds great. And I think Challenge is a nice run up to that. It's a nice lead up. It's a nice, introduction to the sound. It just sounds great. It's just done really well. And it, like I mentioned, it's not jarring from Open Canvas or any of the previous tracks. It just sounds like she knows what she's doing. And I think she does know what she's doing. I really enjoyed it.
Right. Let's wrap up the review by ranking the album. The album rankings currently stand as: at number 11, Sprints with Letter to Self; number 10, Glass Beach with Plastic Death; number 9, Dancers, 10 Songs I Hate About You; number 8 is Third Wind by Gulfer; number 7, Office Dog with Spiel; number 6, No Place Like Home by Vacations; number 5, Sheer Mag's Playing Favourites; number 4, Omni's Souvenir; number 3, Phasor by Helado Negro; and number 2, MGMT with Loss of Life; and at number 1, Katie Kirby's Blue Raspberry. Where do we want to put A Coma by Jalen? I think I'd put it at number 1.
All right. Yeah, but I'm...
That's my feeling.
Do you want to get into it at all, or shall I?
I think it's more consistent than Loss of Life by MGMT. I think I really enjoyed that album, and it's pushing in some interesting directions, but there are moments on it which are maybe a bit slow. Blue Raspberry's great, but I don't feel like it's pushing any boundaries sonically. I think it's, you know, really interesting as a lyrical album, and I think the songwriting's really strong there. But for me, and I said it during that review, that the sonics are always going to come first, and I feel like this album's so interesting sonically, and it does so much interesting stuff, and I've just found myself like really captivated by it in a way that I haven't felt with basically any kind of footwork associated or adjacent project in the past.
I think we both come into this album in like a different place, where I'm not usually listening to this music outside of the podcast. And I haven't heard of her music at all before. I sing praises for this album. I really enjoy it. But I still think I might enjoy MGMT a bit more. But I also think that it's more consistent than Phasor. It has more like stuff that I enjoy. So I'd probably put it at number 3.
I'm going with it splitting the difference. So it's going to go in at number 2. Right. Upcoming releases this week. What's coming out that you need to know about? First off, Mount Kimby are releasing a new album. It's called The Sunset Violent. Mount Kimby are like an electronic duo from the UK. This album seems a lot more rock orientated from what I've heard. That one of the singles is featuring King Cruel, and it seems like a lot of the record might be more like his stuff than what I'd normally associate with Mount Kimby, but could be cool. Next up, the Black Keys are releasing a new record called Ohio Players. I haven't heard any new Black Keys material in a while. I don't know if they've released anything, but I think they're normally like a solid band, although maybe not revolutionary. Kurangbin are releasing a new album. It's called Ala Sala. And finally, Vegan, the kind of alternative pop producer, is releasing a new record called The Road to Hell is Paved with Good Intentions. That's it for upcoming releases, and that's it for the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you, James, for joining me.
Thank you.
If you like the show, new episodes come out every Monday. If you're likely to forget, you can subscribe on your podcast service of choice and consider turning on notifications to be reminded. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email at unmutedunmastered@gmail.com. I can now announce that the album for next week is Live, Laugh, Love by Chastity Belt.